Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome, everybody, to Informal Paranormal. This is Doug Kelly. I'm here with my good friend John Roski. John.
Hey, how you doing, everyone?
Good to have everybody with us on Monday, June 28, 2010. We're going to talk about stuff tonight. It's always an interesting topic, isn't it? Stuff. I thought it was an interesting topic, but apparently I'm alone in my sentiments. So, John, you have had an interesting past week. We're going to be talking about your visit to Waverly Hills Sanatorium and perhaps some other stuff. A couple of side notes before we get into our discussion. This show is for you, our listeners, especially our live listeners, because that's where we have the most fun, right? Yeah, there you go. And so we want to encourage our live listeners to get in there in the chat room, ask questions. If you'd like to call in and just bring up a topic or ask a question or just stop and say hi, that's what it's for. That's this show. And we encourage you to do so. Don't be shy. I mean, you know, we do this and, you know, it's just informal, just, you know, talking. So give us a call. The number's there on your screen, or if you have a headset on your computer, you can use it and click on that buttons, that click to talk button or Skype button or whatever it is, and you will be taken into our call screening area. Now, just a side note as well, if you are just calling in to listen, then don't push the number one. And if you want to actually come on, go ahead and push the number one when you dial in, because that will raise the hand and let us know that you want to talk. So that is what it will be, and John will be screening calls, so he will duck out for a moment and screen those calls, and I'll keep it going. And we'd love to hear from you tonight, your thoughts, your questions, and all that stuff. One other quick note, it just started thundering and raining here, so if by some weird chance my power cuts out or something like that, just give it a few seconds, and either I'll be back or John will call in and resume the show. You may have to refresh your screen to get the audio back, if that should happen. Probably won't, but I just wanted to mention it out there. So, John, you had an interesting week, I take it, at Waverly.
Yeah, Waverly's incredible. You know, when we went there, you know, there's just been so much hype, you know, they've been on all the shows, and you just don't really know what to expect, you know? And so I actually went in there with rather low expectations, and boy, did I get blown away. I mean, it was an absolutely insane night. I saw numerous, and I said numerous, full-bodied apparitions.
Just psychically or with your eyes?
With my eyes. Members of my team saw them at the same time and were having conversations about what we're seeing. It was an incredible, just an absolutely incredible night. Once we had our orientation tour, because the way it starts out is you go into this small auditorium, and they sign waivers basically saying that, you know, if you fall off a balcony or something and kill yourself, they're not responsible, you know, that type of a waiver. And then they take you, and they basically show you the entire facility of the main building. And then took you out and showed you where the body chute was. And you have pretty much access to the entire place. Well, my team and I decided we'd take the first floor to begin with. And within 15 minutes, as we're setting up our equipment, I'm looking across this, it was like, I guess it was a group room at one time. And I'm looking in this dark corner, and I see this white oblong shape about 3.5-4 feet off the ground, that's maybe 2 feet long by about a foot wide, and it's illuminating, and then it disappears. You know, so I'm thinking, well, it's full moon. Maybe there's a window or something, and the light's shining in. So I'm looking all around and realize, no, that's not the case. And so I go back to setting up the camera again, and I see it again. So only this time it's holding steady. So I was next to one of the guys on our team. I tapped on their shoulder and said, hey, Joel, look over there and tell me if you see anything. He's going, oh, my God, what is that? So he's seeing it as well. And again, it faded out and went away. And then it came back, and then it faded away again. So we're, like, really kind of puzzled. Well, the third member on our team came over, and he'd been down the hall, so he hadn't seen or heard any of this interaction. So I said, hey, why don't you go over there and do a take the millimeter and do a reading over there and see if there's any EMF going on. So he walks over, and again, I hadn't told him, you know, I told him generally where to go, but he ends up walking over to probably within about a foot or so where we saw this thing. And as he turns on his millimeter and starts to do the readings, this thing illuminates right in front of him within like a foot.
Really?
And you hear the air just like come out of him. I mean, it surprised him probably just because of the proximity. And so then
how far away was
it? What's that?
How far was it from him?
Like a foot. I mean, literally, he had his millimeter extending out, you know, probably mid-chest height, and it came into focus right in front of it. Now, we were probably, I don't know, probably 10 to 15 yards away from it, so we couldn't really see what it was made up of. All we saw was this illuminating mass. He said that it was like an illuminating mist, is how he described it. And since he was like a foot away, I'd probably go with that. That was, you know, consistent with what we were seeing. So that was the first 15 minutes of being there.
got started out with a bang.
And you know what? And it ended with a bang. And in between, the entire time stuff was happening. About an hour later, we're up on the third floor. And that night we were running a flare camera with video capability. We were running a brand new piece of equipment that one of the team had just gotten back, and that's a Sony Nightshot camera that had been sent to a lab and was converted to full spectrum. And we were using that, and we were also using just two Sony night cameras with some different additional illuminators on them. So we had a lot of cameras running in the hallways, and so what we'd do is we'd set them up along the hallway, and then we'd do our investigation. At one point, it's really dark in the hallways, and you got to understand the thing about Waverly. If you've seen the pictures, it looks big. But when you're inside there, you feel like an ant. Just because of the scale of, you know, how high the ceilings are, how many thousands of doors there are. I mean, literally. I mean, the place is just on almost an unimaginable scale. Anyway, at one point, one of our guys was down the hall and far enough away where he's just looking like kind of like a shadow figure. You can't make out anything other than, you know, you can see him moving a little bit. And about halfway between him and me, we had a camera set up with illuminators, and it had it was facing towards him, so the camera screen was facing towards me, so I could see the little, you know, 2-inch or whatever, 3-inch LED screen that's on the camera, and also the red power lights on the two illuminators that were coming out of the side. And I'm looking over there, and I'm getting this, like, just the sense that there's something over there, and I'm watching, and all of a sudden, from the shadows, the shadow detaches and literally walks over to where the camera's at. And I'm thinking, holy crap. You know, I mean, seriously. Because this is just like, oh, man, I can't believe this. And I was standing next to a doorway, and inside the doorway in this small room, the other guy from my team was here, was with me. And so I said, hey, there's a ghost by your camera. And he thought I was talking about the one that was in his hand, so he kind of startles. And I'm like, no. The camera that's out here in the hall. So he pokes his head around, And I wish we were running audio, because all of a sudden you hear this intake of air, and then you hear him go, oh my God, it's leaning over the camera. And it was like this entity was literally leaning over the camera looking at the view screen.
Huh.
So since he was in the room taking digital still photos, he had the camera in his hand, so I said, quick, take a photo. So he takes a photo, and as soon as he does that, it disappears. Okay?
Uh-huh.
So he brings the photo up on the screen on the camera, and we're looking at it, and you can clearly see the tripod, right?
Uh-huh.
But the camera and the two illuminators, something's blocking it out and obscuring it.
Huh.
You can barely make it out. So I said, quick, take another photo. And he may have moved by a foot or so, but we were still more or less the same distance away. And on that photo, you can see the red illumination lights. You can see the screen. You can make out the camera just fine. And everything's consistently the same. It's not like the camera is darker or anything like that.
Right.
Everything looks like it was supposed to look. And because in the first photo, the tripod section of the camera looked absolutely fine. So it wasn't like we had some kind of, you know, every once in a while you've got to be careful when you're taking flashes, because they're like almost like a misfire, and it's not like a full flash. And you get some really funky effects that way. But this was a full flash. That wasn't going on, because you can tell from the bottom part of the photo just, you know, the amount of light and everything. So that was pretty crazy. And, you know, that kind of stuff gets you all fired up, right?
Right.
So about a half hour after that, we're on the third floor still. And, again, Tim walked down the hall. And, you know, we stay within visual contact. But again, this place is so big that you could literally walk down the hall and in the dark end up not being able to see the people on your team.
Uh-huh.
Again, because of the scale that we're talking about. And so we're watching him, and he's probably, I don't know, 15 yards from us. And there's enough light in there that we can clearly make him out and everything. And all of a sudden, I see a woman standing behind him. And so Joel on my team, he's looking in a different direction, so I hit him on the shoulder and have him turn around. He sees it as well.
Wow.
And so the third guy on the team, Tim, he's looking down the hall not realizing that literally there's this female spirit standing 2 feet behind him.
Huh.
So I go, Tim, there's a ghost standing behind you.
God.
Well, I didn't know what else to do. I mean, what do you say? You know, because, you know, you want to move fairly
turn around and take a picture.
Yeah, you know. And so he spins around, and as soon as he does it, Doug, I'm telling you, man, blink, she's gone. So I said, hey, Tim, there was a woman spirit directly behind you. She was definitely checking you out. You know, this looked totally like an intelligent interaction. So he goes, well, all right, I'll start running. I'll do some EVP work. So he pulls out the recording and starts doing some EVP work. So he walks away from us down the hall, and he gets to the point where he just gets out of our field of vision due to the darkness, and we hear him stop. And then we hear him walking back, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And for the first minute that he's walking,
mm-hmm.
you can hear his footfalls, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you could hear a second set of footfalls that were falling in a way that it was clear that it wasn't an echo. Because, first of all, he had been walking and there had been no echo. And then something else started walking, and the pattern was wrong for an echo. But anyway, so we start hearing the second set of footfalls. So I look over at Joel, and he's looking at me like, because he's hearing it also.
Uh-huh.
So we're looking, and as Tim comes out of the darkness to where we can see him, the woman spirit is about between 2 and 4 feet behind him, because we could see two heads. We could see Tim was wearing a hat. We could see this kind of bush hat on his head
mm-hmm.
as he's coming into focus, because, you know, he started out due to the light kind of looking like a shadow figure, except, you know, he had his unique bush hat on. So he's walking in, and all of a sudden behind him, we see this head without a hat walking, and as it came closer to where it was more light, it was the woman's spirit again. So I go, Tim, I can't tell exactly how far away, but she's between 2 and 4 feet behind you. So again, he turns around, only this time instead of like real fast, he just did a slow turn, but again, she immediately blinked out.
And either of you guys take pictures?
At this point, I was actually changing my battery on my flare camera, and Joel was doing EVP stuff.
Bummer.
So that one, you know, we didn't get. But it'll be interesting to see if Tim ended up getting any EVPs when he was down there talking to her, because clearly she was interested in him. The last thing happened was, at one point, I was walking, and I felt like I had walked into a spirit, and I sensed an old man. And it wasn't hostile, but it was like he clearly didn't feel like I didn't feel like he wanted to interact or anything.
Uh-huh.
So I sensed him for about a minute, and then he was gone. And I was looking up at the hall towards our camera, and in this central hallway, there's rooms on each side of the hallway, and they pretty much line up. So you could run from one room on the left and run straight across to a room on the right. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because the doorways line up.
So I'm actually looking at the picture.
Okay. Now, when I'm looking up there and I'm looking at the camera, something catches my vision down low, and I look down low on the left-hand side of the hallway, and I see a white dog, and he hauls butt across the hallway. And I'm like, holy cow, I just saw my first spirit animal, you know?
Huh.
You know, it's just like, wow. So that was a big deal for me. And then, Doug, I realized this dog just ran in front of a camera that was running 2 illuminators, and the dog was about 10 feet in front of it.
So maybe you got something.
We might have. The only possible thing, well, I mean, who knows if we got something. But it could be where we had the camera shooting down the hall. There's a possibility that the dog could have been 10 feet away from it. Could have potentially been under the field of
the view.
Camera was shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Go ahead.
We got even one more that tops everything else.
Really?
We're up on the fourth floor, and Tim's down the hall again, and he's taking photos, and he's shooting away from where Joel and I are. And at this point, you know, it's like 3 a.m, and I'm getting a little tired, so I'm actually just leaning up against the wall, kind of checking things out and stuff. I was in the doorway, leaning against the door jamb, and Joel's about 4 feet away from me in the well, I'm not quite in the center of the hall, but in this hallway. And I was looking away from him, and he says, I'm being touched. And I look over at him, and as I look at him, Kim takes a flash photo, but he's shooting in the opposite direction from us. But it back illuminates, and I saw a little girl standing next to Joel, reaching up and touching his forearm. Now, Joel said to me was, I'm being touched. So I say, because I'm trying to validate what I'm experiencing, so I go, Joel, there's a little girl touching your left forearm. And he goes, yes. And when I said that, that little girl's head spun around, and she looked at me and was totally shocked. And she came rushing towards me, and I thought she was going to go through me. So I had this, like, uh-oh movement. Uh-huh. But then she went to the side of me into the room behind that I was, you know, like in the doorway of. And I looked in there, and she wasn't there. I was literally 4 feet from this little girl. She was probably no more than, like, 4 feet tall. I would guess her to be about 8 years old. She had long brown hair. She was wearing a white dress with long sleeves and the kind of collar that kind of goes up the neck, you know, and it's buttoned tight and then like with like lace to it. And it was absolutely amazing.
Yeah. Well, that's really cool. So the picture that you sent to me a little while ago, what floor was that taken on?
That, I think, was taken on the third floor.
Let's
but I just got that at the
right.
same floor.
Well, I'm going to give the link. I'm going to give the link so people can go take a look at it. And then it can give them an idea of, you know, what it looks like. I mean, I'm sure a lot of us have seen it on TV documentaries and so forth, but there's an interesting picture, and I'll let you talk about it. Why don't you just talk about it? You know more about it than I do.
All right. I believe we're up on the third floor, but again, I just got that picture a few minutes before the show started. All our evidence is still being reviewed, but we kind of have this like unofficial rule in the team is we don't like send stuff out to each other until we're done reviewing. And the fact that this guy kind of broke the rule means he's really excited about what he has.
Uh-huh.
And what that photo is a capture from a video. And he indicated evidently that video was going to just, you know, rock my world. and given everything else that happened that night, it's like, okay.
In this picture, we see a it's like a misty column. Not really. It's kind of a horizontal column of smoke or mist coming down from the left.
No one on our team smokes. I was standing next to the person shooting that video, so I can absolutely assure you there was no smoking going on. And given that the temperature in the building was a few degrees cooler than the furnaces of hell, I can assure you that's not anyone's breath. Oh, it was brutal that night. I mean, when we started investigating at 7 at night and we were taking our temperature readings in the building, it was 99 degrees.
Oh, my God.
And on the first floor, all the windows were shut. There was no air movement. So not only was it 99 degrees, it felt like one of those kind of saunas where they add, you know, moisture to the air. Definitely not a dry sauna. So
Yari's got a question. Did the tour give any information about TV or if there's any possibility of residuals in the building?
Okay. Actually, in terms of TB, it was a tuberculosis asylum, and at the height of the TB epidemic, there were on some days dozens of people dying. I mean, that's why they started using that body chute. One of the misconceptions about the body chute is they didn't build that for sending bodies down to the hearses. That was actually made for moving supplies easily, because the thought was they were trying to take a holistic approach to treating TB because they really didn't know, that much about it. So they wanted the grounds to be peaceful and quiet and serene, so they didn't want delivery trucks coming up on the grounds and, you know, dropping off crates of stuff. So they created this chute, which shoots down to the bottom of the hill, because Waverly's up on a hill, down to a road that was down below, and that way they could discreetly load stuff. But at the height of the epidemic, literally the hearse was driving up through the main gate multiple times during the day, and that was pretty upsetting to the patients because, you know,
right,
they were seeing the potential future.
Interesting.
I mean, and as far as residual, my feeling was, when we were up on the fifth floor, now the fifth floor is actually the little square building, the little square structure that you see on the top of the Waverly. And it's actually not that big. And there were just two small wards up there. And why they did this configuration, I don't know. One ward housed all the children. And then there was a common lobby hallway where the stairs came up and where the elevator was. And then a mirror image to that ward is where they had the insane patients. Because in end-stage TB, frequently the patients would go insane. Why they would put people suffering that way in an area where children would be aware of them, I have no idea. I don't think that made a whole lot of sense. But anyway, up on the children's section, I actually felt a lot of residual energy there. And to me, it was very pleasant. It wasn't like trauma or people being frightened and stuff. It felt playful. It felt nice, which... You know, I'm kind of happy that's how it felt, you know, because you know, just imagine being a child and being, you know, placed in an asylum like that and what your life must have been like. So it sounds like they really made a lot of attempts to, you know, make it as pleasant as possible for the children. The whole roof on the left-hand side of the building actually had a fence that went around it, and underneath the fence there was actually netting in case some child climbed the fence and fell over, they would actually get caught in this, like, cargo net. But the whole upper structure had, like, playground equipment and stuff, so the kids could actually go outside, and the area is huge, and there was, like, swing sets and other type of stuff, so they could run around and, you know, be as normal as they could be. So... But like I said, for some reason, they put the insane folks, you know,
on the
side of the hall.
Huh. That's amazing.
One of the things that was interesting at the end of the night, one of the guides was like, so, anything happened to you? And it's like, well, as a matter of fact, you want to hear what just happened to me? Because I'd gone down right after I'd had the interaction with the old man and the dog. And because what we did, it was so hot and we were sweating so much, we kind of pretty much put ourselves on a routine of like every hour going down to the room where there was air conditioning, having some Gatorade, doing about 10 minutes to recover, and then go back. And I think that doing anything else in that kind of an environment, someone would have gotten hurt. But anyway, so she's asking me what went on. I said, well, you know, I was up on this floor and I saw this dog. And she goes, well, let me show you something. And she pulls out this scrapbook, and she's got, like, you know, Xerox articles and whatnot in it and stuff. And it turns out there was the previous owners of Waverly had allowed this homeless man to live there, and they didn't run him off. And the deal was is he would chase off trespassers. And for that, he got to stay there. So this went on for a long time. And then But he used to, like, disappear for a day or two or something like that, and then he'd show up again. So, you know, it wasn't, you know, 100%. So at one point, 2 weeks go by without seeing this guy, so they figured, oh, well, you know, he just moved on. Well.
He did.
Yeah, literally. One end of the building where the elevator shaft was, and this elevator door had been, like, frozen shut for, you know, probably decades, this really nasty stench started coming up, so they got a real bad feeling. So they called the fire department. Fire department came out and forced the door, and they looked down in the shaft, and in the bottom of the shaft, the old man and his dog had been beaten to death.
Oh, no.
And here's the deal. The dog was a white Spitz. And she'd asked me before she shows me this stuff and is telling me about this, she said, what'd the dog look like? And the guide had brought her dog in to keep her company that night. And I said, well, it was all white, and it was about twice as big as your dog. And that would put it consistent with the size of the Spitz. So, you know, did I sense him and see the dog? I don't know, but that's kind of an interesting back history, you know?
Yeah, no kidding. That brings a compelling validation to it, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know. But, you know, it's, you know, I'm still, like, trying to, like, put everything, wrapping my head around everything that was going on there that night, you know. I saw more things that night almost than, you know, that I've seen since in the last 30 years. all in one night. Because you know what? I'm not going to even talk to you about all the shadow people I saw.
Why not? Shadow we got time.
Well, I mean, but the reality is we kept seeing shadow peoples here and there and stuff like that. And it was like constantly during the night. Now, you know, I have certain sensitivities, and when I go places, I tend to, you know, feel spirits and whatnot. And I'm going to tell you what, going to Waverly felt like the equivalent of going to a rock concert with, like, the Rolling Stones or something. It felt like just one huge crowd. You know, you literally felt that kind of being packed in there with people.
So would you go back?
I would have gone the next night, you know, if I could have. Yeah, we're definitely, the team already decided next year's road trip is going to be back there to Waverly. Because you know what? It's literally a unique place. And, you know, people like to say, you know, Waverly's the most haunted place in the United States. You know what? I haven't been to everywhere in the United States, but I'd probably be willing to bet some serious money that they're probably right.
Huh. So tell me, were you was your team the only team there that night?
No, we had in order to bring the cost down for renting the facility, we brought in another team we've worked with a couple times out of Alexandria, Virginia, and there were six of them on their team. My team was supposed to have four of us, but one person had oral surgery, emergency oral surgery, the day before we were supposed to leave, so he bailed. So we had Waverly, and we were investigating Waverly with a total of nine investigators. And you know what? The only time we ever saw the other teams, now we were running three-person teams. The only time we ever bumped into them was in the area where we were doing the recovery, you know, sitting down in the cold and having, you know, the Gatorade. But, you know, we initially would say each time we'd coordinate, well, we're going to be up on this floor, you're going to be on that floor, whatever. So, you know, again, the scale of the place is so huge that literally, you know, if we hadn't been taking those breaks, we probably would have never seen them. I mean, it would have been just random luck running into them in that place.
And did they have any experiences?
Yeah, they did. They had one that sounded real creepy. They were on the fourth floor, and Bonnie from Aurora team had actually been investigating there the week before us, mm-hmm. and she had sent me an email saying that, you know, basically the fourth floor was a pretty wild place. Well, this other team, they have a psychic on their team as well, and the founder of the team was walking down this hall, and they saw this shadowy type figure, and you know, they've seen shadow figures before and whatnot. But this thing ended up crawling up the wall and coming at them, crawling on the ceiling.
Huh.
Which is like, holy cow, that sounds pretty bizarre.
So in Hollywood.
Yeah, I mean, totally. So I don't know, you know. I wasn't there. That's the one thing they reported. And again, I'm sure they haven't had a chance to review all their evidence at this point.
Yeah. Huh. Well, that sounds like an amazing place. I have to go there sometime.
Yeah, it's it is a most amazing place. Most amazing.
So how about any of our live listeners? Anybody been to Waverly? You want to call in and tell us about your experiences? Don't be shy. The numbers are on your screen. Or if you have a headset, you can use your computer to dial us up with that button at the top. Or if you have something else you want to talk about, you're more than welcome or ask a question. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, and you know, Doug, I'm working on trying to get the owner of Waverly to come on our show in September. So hopefully we can get that all nailed down.
Yeah, that'll be great. So you had a lot of experiences. So what's your, what has your experiences at Waverly done for, how has it changed you, if it has, in fact, changed you, in terms of being an investigator? What have you learned from the whole thing?
I wish I had four arms so I could carry all the equipment that I need at the ready. Because it always seems like, you know, when something happens, you know, you're changing a battery or you've got something to photograph with when there's something audio going on, or you're ready to photograph something and you know, something, or, you know, you're doing audio work and something, you need to photograph it. So, wish I had an extra set of arms, but I don't know. You know, for me, it was a very validating experience because, you know what? It was so in your face. I mean, it was so in your face that you couldn't doubt yourself.
Huh.
Because, well, you know that. You know, I've talked to you about this. You know, a lot of times, you know, I question myself. I question my experiences. You know, it's like kind of a, you know, did this really happen? Was it real? You know, was it my imagination? Was it wishful thinking? But I'm going to tell you what. I have absolutely no doubt that everything that I experienced that night was as real could be. Did you have any problems with batteries or equipment? Yeah, actually, we did. Our batteries weren't lasting as long as normal. I was using the batteries that I have in my FLIR camera. They usually run for over 2 hours, and I was barely getting an hour out of them, and I was having to recharge them. And they're good batteries. And in fact, I've used the camera a couple times since Waverly, and I'm back to running them for 2 hours. Now, I know that cold will affect batteries, but I don't think temperatures in the 90s is something that's going to cause the batteries to drain faster. But, you know, I'm not an expert with batteries, but I don't think that's how it works. Now, the other team kept telling me that when they were taking pictures of stuff going on, they kept having their cameras, their digital cameras kept freezing. And stuff would happen like... this one guy has this digital camera that, like, you know, when you turn it on, it has a auto-focusing kind of thing that it, or the lens, like, pops out of the camera and positions itself. It was doing stuff like, as he's trying to take the photo, it would try and go back in, but he hadn't, like, flipped the switch to do that, or the camera would just simply freeze up. But not just his camera. Other cameras were having that level of malfunction, too. And again, you know, it was hot and it was humid, but, you know, I just don't think that would be doing it. Okay, in terms of feeling and measuring cold spots, well, tonight I started reviewing video that I had done with the FLIR camera, and I've got some stuff that I'm really questioning at this point, and there's a possibility we got a blue figure and standing behind me at one point. And a number of times in the video, I find these, like, blue circular spots. You know what I want to say, but I'm not going to do it. But I'm finding these, like,
blue... John got orbs.
Blue spherical spots of cold amongst what appears to be 90 degree background, and they're there and then they're not there. So what I'd like to do with those is I'd like to actually contact FLIR, because there's a, you know, like a helpline, and find out, you know, in that type of environment, is there a possibility that you could have these random, you know, cold spots? Or you know, something like that showing up on the film. But
so
as far as the question in the chat room is, did you measure or feel cold spots? There were times when we walked into areas that were 20 degrees colder than other sections of the hall, and then it would go back to, you know, high 80s, low 90s. And there wasn't a breeze that night. And we were seeing these areas every once in a while with the thermal camera, and it was kind of, it was bizarre, because you'd have this basic temperature background that was reading in the high 80s to mid 90s. And then all of a sudden there'd be a section where it would look like it's, you know, 60 degrees, and then boom, it's gone, and then it's back up into the high area.
Well, that would be something to ask FLIR about, too. You know,
yeah, absolutely.
Misread areas.
Now, the one thing that I'm going to be working on, and if it turns out to be real, we'll definitely post it on the Waverly posting on Paranexus there. At one point, my team was running the FLIR camera, and one had the camera and one had the monitor, and they actually pan over to me, and I'm showing like bright red and yellow due to my body temperature and stuff. And over my right shoulder appears to be like in a window, except there was no glass there. There appears to be shoulders and a head in dark blue, which, based on the scale, the temperature scale, I would say it was probably like 30 degrees or less.
Really?
So if that turns out to be real and not some kind of structure, there's a number of things in the environment and they just lined up in the right way to create that. But looking at, since we were running video cameras as well, I want to compare what we had with the FLIR with the video camera and see if there's, you know, just something there. Maybe it was a piece of furniture or maybe it was something else. I don't know, but right now it looks pretty good.
Yeah, I'd love to see some of those FLIR clips. That would be cool.
Yeah, we'll get them up. The other thing the FLIR camera has the ability is that it does the equivalent of like digital pictures as well. So.
Mm. Oh yeah.
But. So that was an exciting time. And, of course, we were in Louisville, Kentucky, you know, which is the, like, bourbon capital of the world. So in the daylight, being the dedicated investigators that we are, we checked out the other spirits that were about. Dude, I can tell you just about everything you'd ever want to know about how to make bourbon at this point.
Took the tour, huh?
Yeah, it took multiple tours, but anyway.
Well, it sounds like you had a pretty awesome time and a lot of activity, and, you know, there's been some talk. We had a board meeting last night, and I think Mike was talking about trying to do a conference or something, so maybe we'll have to think about something like that down the road, especially in view of all the activity you've got. Now, one question I had, did any of the spirits try to contact you or say anything to you or communicate with you psychically?
Well, see, in that kind of environment, I actually have a hard time necessarily talking with spirits because there's so much stuff going on. And the other thing that, for me, one of the things that I've learned within actually the last couple months is if I'm focusing on scientific equipment and doing that aspect of investigating, my abilities as a psychic are almost like shut off. I don't know whether it's because I'm using one the side of my brain that's the analytical side,
mm-hmm.
versus the side that's more open and free and stuff. So the answer to your question is no. In this particular case, I didn't have anyone like come up and chat me up or something like that. But the thing was, is I constantly was hearing, like, talking in the background and stuff like that. I couldn't tell you what was being said. But literally, it was like being in a crowd environment. You know that kind of almost like a hum that you hear in a crowd?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't make out that what's being talked, what's necessarily being said, but there's like this, almost like an audio hum is how I'd describe it. Well, it was kind of like that, only it was, you know, not in the audio range, if you will.
So, Kathy wants to know, did you get any EMF readings that were unaccountable?
Yeah, absolutely. We would be in places where we'd go from 0 to 3 and have a spike, and it would hold for, I don't know, maybe 30 seconds, and then it would disappear. And then we would run various meters all around there to see if there was any possible source. And No, there wasn't. And, you know, we were using, you know, Mel meters and tri-field natural meters. So, like with the tri-field, you know, even if it was man-made, the way we had it set for that night, you know, it wouldn't register something man-made in terms
right.
of, you know, so, and we were getting hits on that as well.
That's cool. And that's more,
yeah.
that's more better to use a, you know, a technical term than the AC
yes.
EMF readers, you know, the tri-field yep. naturals. Yeah, that's great. So, Class A EVPs.
Okay. See, we're still at the point where we haven't reviewed all that yet. And like I said, I just started reviewing the video, and the video that I run with the FLIR camera at this point doesn't have audio capability, but that's actually something that I'm going to incorporate eventually, because I think I figured out how to do that. Now, Bonnie with the Aurora team was there the week before, and she sent me an EVP that I would say is a Class A EVP.
We use a KM scale around here, Class 1,
right.
Class 2, Class 3, and null. So was it interactive?
Well, you know, I can't tell you because I have this little clip that's basically I don't know what's happening before or after the clip.
So it's either Class 1 or 2. It's either interactive
right.
or non-interactive.
Right.
Well, that's interesting. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what Bonnie posts, if anything, on the EVP side of things. And you guys haven't reviewed all of your audio, right?
Oh, no, not at all. I'm so meticulous when I review audio. Literally, I spend between 8 and 10 minutes of review time for every minute of audio recorded. So do the math. And I don't know if everyone else on the team spends that level with it, but and that's what I do. So it actually takes me a while, you know.
Well, if you get some suspect EVPs, you should post them. And then Ingrid and Dale Huey, who we had on the Paranexus Universe the other night, who's also in the chat room, they can take a gander at them. They both work together, and they're both EVP experts. And it'd be cool
Absolutely.
To get a take on them.
Yeah.
In fact, Ingrid's in there.
Right
too.
Now, the only one that I have right now is the one that Bonnie sent me, but I'm not going to send someone else's evidence out without permission.
Yeah.
So, because that's, in case anyone here is listening, that's a giant no-no.
Yeah.
When someone
yeah.
sends you evidence, you don't bring passing it around. So.
Well, Kathy's got a question. Did you get EVP and EMF and photos all at the same time, or were they separate occurrences? Good question, Kathy. Sounds like you're learning some stuff there. That's great.
We'll start with the first floor. I mean, Tim got an EMF spike at the moment that thing materialized in front of him. There's a possibility we were running cameras in that direction. I think it was just a normal night vision camera with an extender. So whether we got that or not, I don't know yet, because we haven't gotten that far with the evidence review. But, you know, it's one of those kind of things where we were focusing on – well, actually, we had two pieces of equipment that we were focusing on that's relatively new to the team. When you're running a FLIR camera with a monitor, that takes two people. And when you're focusing on that, it's kind of hard to also be doing, you know, EMF and audio work as well. But I guess the answer is when we were getting, like, EMF spikes, it was usually we were doing the reading at that point of time because we had just seen something or experienced something. You know, it was like we were typically doing that after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
To see if there was anything lingering or if there was any kind of, you know, EMF anomaly or what.
So,
But
so,
this is the kind of place, you know, I'm a big proponent of when you do investigations, do it with a small group.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this place is the exception to that rule because it could certainly handle a whole lot of people. You know, you'd have to be organized about it, but, you know, having a few more hands, you know, having teams of three people where all three of us, one had audio, one had, video, and one was doing, EMF, I mean, that would have been a good way to do it, too, so.
Well, yeah, I mean, it would be so cool, you know, someday when Paranexus grows up and, you know, has tons of funds, you know, we can all do a highly technical, you know, scientific research project there with stuff, you know.
Yep.
All kinds of stuff. That would be great. I mean, that would be awesome. And, you know, we'll have to look into having a conference there. I think that would be an awesome idea. I don't know if they do that. I don't really know anything about it, but that would be an
Actually,
awesome place.
In the old laundry room of this hospital, they've converted that into a, like, conference center and,
oh, cool,
and gift shop. And that's the area that we'd go at night because that's the only part of the building that's air-conditioned. But they've got, like, a movie theater size, like, projection screen set up in there for doing
cool
stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to look into that. That would be an awesome thing to do, especially in view of the activity that you experience there. So, wow.
Hey, Doug.
Yeah.
Catherine says that she was talking about having a hard time with technical aspects of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kathy, let us know what you mean.
Yeah.
We can throw that into the conversation. We have a few minutes left. And I'm sure after this interview, John, you're going to want to crash. Probably, you had a lot of energy in it. A lot of excitement.
Yeah.
She says, so do I understand correctly that there isn't collaborating, she probably means corroborating evidence. In other words, in the course, the CPI course, you know, we teach corroborating evidence, different, more than one source of evidence. You want to comment on that?
Well, at this point, you know, basically what I was talking to you about was personal experiences. On Paranexus site, you see one photo that someone's already sent to me that they caught. So I would absolutely be astonished if we, in fact, don't have collaborating evidence when the evidence review is done. I already have stuff on it that I think has the potential for being paranormal, but I just simply want to make sure that there's not some issue with the camera or something like that. So,
And that's a good point, and that's one of the reasons why John's on the show talking tonight, and it's one of the reasons why he's a board member is because, and it's one of the things I respect about John and many other people, is that they don't just take it at face value. We need to find out. It's like you were talking about the FLIR camera. You know, could it have some anomalies associated with its structure or with its design that could account for some of these things? But, you know, the thing... And I'll continue. The thing that I like about the way you approach it is in a grounded, rational way. Yes, you see things. Yes, you have psychic sensitivity, but you're not willing to just stop there and make a claim based on that. You want to get something to back it up. And, you know, when you've got two eyewitnesses to an apparition, that's pretty compelling, especially when the eyewitnesses are grounded researchers. I mean, that's even more compelling. And it's hard to argue that away. What you've experienced is hard to argue it as expectations, fulfilled expectations. It's hard to say that you went in there looking for something to happen, you know, knowing you as I do.
Well, that's what I was trying to say early on. You know, it's like, you know, I'd heard all the hype, and I was hoping that it was going to turn out to be true, but I really went in there expecting it not to be.
Right.
But, you know, like, you know that everyone on my team has been certified through Paranexus. So, I mean, we all have a common background as far as, you know, our idea of evidence collection and what's appropriate behavior, et cetera. So, you know, we simply approach things a little bit differently. Like, for instance, you were talking about my psychic ability. I have never, and I never will, tell a client that their house is haunted solely based on my psychic impressions. It just will never happen. If we do not have collaborating evidence, then, you know, we just don't go there. Because essentially when I tell you something that I see a ghost, I've told you a ghost story. Now, Doug knows me, and he trusts me. So when I tell him something, I think he believes me.
Yeah,
well,
I do.
People who don't know me, you know, they have to make a leap of faith. You know, is this guy a crazy guy? Is this guy a liar and a fraud? Or did he see it? Well, if you don't know me and I tell you, yeah, I saw a lady on the third floor of your house and listened to this EVP of a woman talking, and, oh, by the way, there were only males in the house. You know what I'm saying? That's the kind of stuff that puts you in good standing when you're, you know, talking to a client, you know.
So, and that's such a point that we've hit on so many times on Baranexus Universe and various radio programs, is to remain grounded, to look for the supporting evidence, to, and I've said it 1,000 times, you know, the validity of any evidence stands squarely in the shoulders on the credibility of the investigator. So the thing that I look for first and foremost in any investigator, in any researcher, is not so much their technical ability as it is, as I do their groundedness, their reasonableness. Do they go into a place with no preconceived notions? Do they remain objective? Do they search to find any kind of compelling supportive evidence? That's the most important thing to look for or to have, and that's the thing that we've got to work on. So we've got about 3 or so minutes left, and Dale, ask, you have something you want to throw in?
I just wanted to say one thing real quick to Catherine. My suggestion to her is to take one piece of equipment. Don't try and do it all at once. Take one piece of equipment and learn everything that you can about that piece of equipment and be able to operate that one piece of equipment professionally. And once you get that down, then go to another piece. But don't try and do them all at once, because it probably won't work for you, or it'll be much harder than it needs to be.
Yeah, and just take your time, and it will come. And look at the other things that are posted on Paranexus too, especially the EVPs. Take a look at them, analyze the ones that are posted as well, and that will help you too. And listen to what's posted. Ingrid has posted some great information in Paranexus, and I'll use this opportunity to say, if you're not a member of Paranexus, you know, you're missing some stuff. I mean, come and join us. We are an association, like a trade association of researchers, and there's a lot of good information in the forums and available to members, along with a bunch of other benefits that you just don't find everywhere else. And so we're looking for people to join in and share your knowledge, share your expertise. We don't compete with anybody. We're all trying to find the same thing. So come in and join us, paranexus.org. You want to do maybe a 30-second sum up of your Waverly trip? Go.
I'll tell you.
Real quick.
It was the most crazy night of my entire life, and I think that really says it all.
Oh, that's okay. So you saw a bunch of apparitions. You had a lot of experiences.
Okay, well, I had a first. I saw my first spirit animal. I saw the ghost of a white dog. And, you know, that was awesome for me, because that's kind of something I'd always, like, thought would be really interesting to see and experience. And I certainly wasn't thinking that I'd be seeing it there. I was more, you know, in lines of, I'll go to a haunted dog pound someday and maybe see one. But, you know, that was pretty amazing for me. I mean, it was a total first.
Well, if you were listening here to the live broadcast and you missed some of it or most of it, the archive will be available here shortly after we're finished, so you can go back and listen to it. And there is some evidence posted, at least one picture right now, in the Waverly post on Paranexus.org in the forum that's visible to the public and everybody, so you can go take a look at it. Please join us this week for Paranexus Universe, where John will be also hosting with Sharon Coyle of Rolling Hills Asylum, So that'll be an interesting show. Again, join us at Paranexus.org. And if you're looking for instruction, Paranexus Academy. Folks, our time is up. Have a great night. Thanks, John. Good night, everybody.
Good night.